Well, it's nice to have kind of walked literally through this radio row last year and understand what happens, like lived what happens.
Right.
You can see it. You can hear, read about it. But until you live it, you don't have quite the level of understanding.
Heath and I loved having Commissioner Slive come talk to us. I'm curious, what was maybe the number one piece of advice about this event? I wouldn't ask you about running the conference. I might, but for now, what was maybe the one piece of advice he gave you about this event that has stuck with you?
I'm trying to think back to last year heading in. You know, there were a couple people that around this league, Mike was one, said, you know what, you just have to be yourself. And, you know, he told me, I think we visited the week before media days over a cup of coffee. We have a habit of doing that. And
he did like his coffee.
Yeah, so do I. And we have a place to meet. And he said, you know, you'll be great. And that's, you want a little bit of wind beneath your wings.
Right, right.
I'll give you a little bit further insight. Like 2 weeks ago, we met for 2.5 hours on July 1st. We finished, and he said, it was a gift. He said, you're the commissioner. You're the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. Don't ever look back.
Right.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yesterday, one of the things that Commissioner Slive always did was kind of set the table a little bit. Now you kind of have your chance to do that. The theme you guys rolled out was it just means more. For fans who are saying, well, what means more? In your own words, how would you kind of explain to them what that message was?
Well, the conversation started around what we do in intercollegiate athletics as a conference. There's more attention. We've had the most successful launch of a television network in cable history. Well, why is that? Well, there's something meaningful happening here that is at a greater level. So we start to inform those words. When you look at our university campuses, the impact of the University of South Carolina on Columbia and on the state of South Carolina and even beyond the borders of the state, there is meaning there that has grown greater and greater over time as that university's stature has been magnified. That's true around the Southeastern Conference. And you come to learn that when people graduate and have those diplomas in their hands, that means more to them. That it's a part of this conference, that it's from universities who are a part of this conference. When we succeed or when we lose, it has more meaning. When families and people gather around of all backgrounds, all ethnicities, political views, and participate, there's greater meaning for being part of the Southeastern Conference. And so it's a three words meant to convey a lot that aren't limited to a football field or a basketball court, but really talk completely about the impact of education and the universities involved in providing education.
Talking to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, here on 107.5 The Game.
One of the things that you were asked about yesterday involved this conference. It's been aggressive with regards to taking policies on transfers and whatnot. People asked about could there be some sort of effort to also do something with regards to high school kids that may have had assaults or other issues that would not be allowed to transfer in, but that right now schools are allowed to make their decision on. Is there a broader structure of college football that you could play a leadership role? Instead of the SEC kind of lone wolfing their thing and Pac-12 does their thing, is there a better way to do this where with what we have right now with the Power 5 conferences working together with autonomy, is that the better way to address that if it's going to be addressed at all?
Well, I think the underlying question relates to enrolling freshmen and should there be some national standards about conduct. I'm not sure, even as it relates to a lot of laws, how much uniformity from state to state there is. Now, certainly there are national laws. But we should take a step back from this conversation for a second and say, what are we talking about? Out of 350 enrolling football scholarship freshmen thereabouts, we're talking about one individual. And that drives a conversation. And that says we need to transfer responsibility. I think on the other hand, our institutions have shown that they can make decisions. They have allocated certain authority to the commissioner's office. We work at deploying that authority appropriately. And we're in constant conversation about should we adapt as a conference. That doesn't necessarily transfer to the national level on every issue. I think one could observe that some things don't work well at the national level. There's a lot of complaints about the NCAA. and its rules and its enforcement. So let's be careful before we rush to assume that that's a solution for concerns that involve a very limited number of individuals.
Kind of piggybacking off of that, there was a lot of talk about the Power Five, about autonomy, about the impact it might have. Recently, there was some talk about the basketball committee and the idea that maybe somehow smaller conferences would get forced out. There were no changes made with that. Just in general, a year into that, how do you feel that that is working?
Well, there's no conversation about forcing smaller conferences out of the basketball committee, so I want to be clear about that. There was conversation about an extension of the thought that the five conferences that are labeled with autonomy provide greater resources, have greater visibility, and should there be an allocation of seats on a continuing basis on certain committees. As it relates to governance, I think we got off to a great start. Young people just went through an academic year where their scholarships were of more value. They received cost of attendance amounts so that they could do things, laundry, money, entertainment. I think every student athlete I've talked to views that as a great step forward. And when we were here a year ago, a lot of conversation about, well, this isn't going to be fair because it's different from campus to campus. It's been implemented, I think, in a seamless way and in a positive way. This past year, we've spent a lot of time talking about time balance issues. We're still working through that. The five conferences made a press release, and there's an opportunity to come to some level of solution. So I think it's been a healthy change. I think it's been used wisely to this point. We have to, at the commissioner level and at the conference leadership level, engage in more proactive thinking. And I know that we're going to be more intentional about that as we move forward.
To stay with something that's kind of financial, one of the things, Commissioner, that I've said before on my show many, many times, and you just mentioned the time management issue, whether you are a cross-country runner who doesn't get to participate in every meet or whether you are a Heisman Trophy candidate, your time commitment to your sport and to your academics are virtually identical. I felt all along that every one of those student-athletes deserves the stipend and that perhaps if things can go the way you're talking, that those Heisman candidates or that All-American basketball player can be allowed to do something within their community for name, image, and likeness. Is that going to move forward, or does that make things in your mind and maybe in your colleagues' mind too much of a professional feel to what's going on?
Well, with that, we're now delving into issues that are subject to legal debate and actual litigation when we talk about name, image, and likeness. One of the challenges is for people to define what they really mean. It is a relatively simple observation. But let's back away from the legal conversation and observe this. So in your question was embedded the idea that there is an equal amount of time committed academically and athletically. I know from talking to 28 student athletes this past weekend that they very much want to excel in the classroom. They're looking forward to graduating, and they're asking me about how can you help me in my transition into a career outside of sports. On the other hand, they want to prepare to compete at the highest level. They know when they chose to be a student athlete in the Southeastern Conference that they chose to challenge themselves competitively. So those are two buckets, academics and athletics, and already their bucket plate's full. Now let's add this other, more commercial component to that. Where does that time come from?
Yeah.
Where does that time come from? Now, in my experience, they're not going to sacrifice their competitive interests. In fact, we're trying to create regulatory structure to manage that down, if you will. Is it going to come from academics? We are about education.
Right.
Centrally, every one of our athletics departments is located on a university campus. In order to play, you have to go to class. You have to be engaged in university life. It may happen in different ways. And so I think we have to be careful before we start identifying solutions that simply draw away from what is still an educational endeavor.
And should every student athlete, regardless of sport, regardless of ability in the SEC or in the Power Five at least, get that stipend, in your opinion?
Well, we have defined every scholarship as being calculated upon the institutional cost of attendance or the individual's cost of attendance.
Yes.
Everyone. You've asked the underlying question, which is, should we continue to have headcount sports and equivalency sports? I think that's the essence of your observation. So right now in baseball, a baseball coach could award a full scholarship and then the cost of attendance delta number, the additional stipend. That's possible. That's just not the culture of baseball because you've got 27 slots you can fill with scholarship players. Now there's more money available to disperse. I think that is a needed conversation personally, and I have for a number of years and have advocated for that. There have been some NCAA groups that have studied it. We're in a large amalgamation of Division I athletic programs that have different thoughts, different perspectives, different resources. And so that's a solution, a destination that might be out there, but we're certainly not near it right now.
Your predecessor at one of these gatherings suggested the idea of better involvement for students with agents, better representation in some way to give them a better understanding. Obviously, you know, recently Bielema and other coaches in the conference have advocated for guys who, for whatever reason, made a poor choice with their draft status to be able to come back. What along those lines in your mind might be feasible to create a better system than what we have?
I'm glad you asked that question. That was actually something in my original remarks, and given what's happened around us culturally, was part of what I removed. So as it relates to football, we have a set of challenges right now, which is the draft declaration date a week or so after the end of the football season, and then you're done. And then the draft comes in April. I'm curious about better timing, if you will. Now, not every football coach thinks that's a good idea. So basketball now has to live with the tension that I may not know if someone's coming back until April or May, late May, maybe even June. How do I manage my roster? At the other hand, how do you help people make decisions, either to go if they're going to be selected and have access to the financial rewards available in the NFL, or not forfeit the educational opportunity? And I am really concerned that we give better and more information. We don't control at the NCAA level certain aspects of the transition process. But I think it's a time for leaders at the college level, at the NCAA level, and I think, too, at the NFL level, to continue this conversation. The NFL's done great work over the last 2 years of predicting first and second round draft picks. I think they're over 90% accurate. But we're still having people make decisions, and we're still going to have people make those decisions. But is there a better way? And I think it's easy to observe there should be. I think the stresses on the structure and signing date and draft needs and team evaluations make it much more complex. But I hope that continues as a conversation. Maybe the last thing is our coaches have talked about maybe a different combine timing, so coming out of combine evaluation effort. So coming out of someone's junior year, they can find and share more information with the NFL. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think the observation's on point.
Yeah. Commissioner, great to have you. You're going to outlaw cowbells on radio, bro.
I heard that. I've not heard that before. Bring responsibly is the theme.
They love doing that, guys.
See, there are advantages to being in the East Division.
Yes, sir.
Once every 6 years.
Although Gamecock fans will be traveling to Starkville this year.
Okay, so well, there it is.
They'll have that.
Well,
yes,
they have to manage themselves downward when it's time to snap the
ball. That's right. Thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it. Thanks for hosting us again.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you when you come back to Columbia. Stop by the studio. Absolutely. Thank you, sir.